The Patriots look to get a little rest today. They have a bye week now after a win that is getting decidedly mixed reviews. We'll break down their victory over the Los Angeles Chargers. And the Celtics are atop the Eastern Conference. But can they hold that spot? It's Monday, October 30th, 2017. I'm Chris Gasper, and this is Season Ticket. Welcome to Season Ticket, a daily podcast from the Boston Globe Sports Department and WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Well, the Patriots are at the halfway mark of their season. They're 6-2. They're riding a four-game winning streak. But Sunday's game didn't exactly inspire confidence. They beat the Los Angeles Chargers 21-13 in what was a sloppy affair. The Chargers nearly tied it with a last-second pass from Phillip Rivers.
Last chance for the Chargers. Down by 8. Rivers throws it. Intercepted. And it's over.
Join me now in the studio to break down this game is Boston Globe senior NFL writer Ben Volen. Ben, when you look at this game and the way the Patriots played, I think it's indicative of their season that they followed their best performance, that 23-7 victory over the Atlanta Falcons, with one that was so uninspired.
Yeah, and I guess it's kind of champagne problems here in New England. Like, they're still winning. They've won 4 in a row, but they're not winning well enough, and they're not converting well enough. Now it's on offense. The first quarter of the season, we were concerned about the defense. Now I'm a little bit concerned with the offense. Their last 4 games, only scoring 21 points per game against the Bucs, Jets, Falcons, and now the Chargers. And they've played some good defenses. The Chargers are pretty solid up front, especially. They gave Tom Brady and the offensive line a lot of fits yesterday. But, you know, their red zone woes are really disconcerting now. And settling for 6 field goals, they'd never kicked that many field goals in a game in the entire 18-year history under Bill Belichick. So they got away with it yesterday. They were able to win the game with defense and an untimely safety by the Chargers. But, you know, moving forward, as the games get more important in December and January, they're going to have to convert some of those red zone opportunities into touchdowns.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. And even looking at their point output yesterday, you say, well, you know, it's 21 points. But 2 of those points were the safety by Travis Benjamin, and they only had 1 touchdown.
First and goal from the 2. Gillis Lee in. Fake it. Brady tosses wide open, Rob Gronkowski. Touchdown, Pats.
And that's the biggest thing, and you hit on it. You know, the 1 touchdown, they were 1-for-4 in the red zone. That's been an issue all season long for them. They came into that game tied for 15th in the NFL in red zone touchdown percentage, which is pretty mediocre and very surprising for a Tom Brady-led offense. And at one point in that game yesterday, they had 5 straight drives where they reached the Chargers 25 or deeper into Los Angeles territory, and all they got out of it was a bunch of field goals.
Yeah, and 2 missed field goals, too. Steven Gostkowski missing 2 from the exact same distance, 43 yards.
Trying to build on this lead for New England, 43 yards away. It's no good. Gostkowski.
You know, it'd be easy to sit back here and say, well, injuries are starting to catch up with them. But on offense, other than Julian Edelman, they've been pretty healthy overall. You know, they're having a lot of the nicks and bruises, Chris Hogan and Danny Amendola especially. But they still have Gronkowski. They still have Brandon Cooks. Their 4 running backs have all been pretty solid this year. So they have the 5 offensive linemen, too, that they've had all season. So the offense doesn't really have the excuse. I just wonder if the Edelman injury is starting to catch up to them a little bit. It's now been 8 games. Teams have a book on them a little bit. And we've seen the last 4 weeks, the offense has really started to grind to a halt.
Yeah, it's interesting when you look at the offense. You know, it seems like when the space becomes more condensed in that red zone area, that maybe that's where they're really missing Edelman. Because I always say about Edelman, I mean, he could get open in a phone booth. You know, that's how good he is. And you think, okay, you have Gronk, who's as good a red zone weapon as there is in the league, and he was effective. He had the touchdown on Sunday. You think that would be enough to elevate your red zone offense, but it doesn't seem like that's the case. And the other thing I would say is that I think there are problems running the ball in the red zone and in short yardage. You see it with Mike Gillisley. I think that's one of the issues they're having in the red zone as well. How good last year was LeGarrette Blount in the red zone and on goal line?
Absolutely. He was fantastic. And you know, I wonder if LeGarrette Blount would be having the same struggles as Mike Gillisley. You know, LeGarrette Blount is certainly not the most dynamic runner. But at the same time, Gillisley is not working out right now. They have a very nice 4 running back rotation, and he got the fewest snaps again yesterday. Deion Lewis has clearly emerged as kind of the workhorse. And then James White and Rex Burkhead have been fantastic in the passing game. The Patriots had 86 snaps on Sunday against the Chargers. Mike Gillisley only played 13 of them. And you look at the offense, they're almost better at converting 3rd and long right now than they are 3rd and short. Their short yardage run blocking and Gillislee's running have not been very good this year at all. And then their screen game as well. Every time they set up a screen pass, it seems to get blown up at the line of scrimmage. So they still have issues at offensive line. And moving forward, you know, the offense is certainly, I think, a bigger concern right now than the defense.
Yeah, that's interesting, right? After the first four games of the season, to say that the defense, the last four games, they've only allowed 12.75 points per game. I did want to give kudos to the offense for this, though. I thought the running backs, and you just hit on this, Ben, were fantastic yesterday in the passing game. They were targeted 15 times. They had 14 catches for 163 yards in that game. And that was a big part of the Patriots' offense. You had James White had 5 for 85. Rex Burkhead had 7 for 68. That was a big part of the game. And maybe that's one way they can compensate a little bit for Edelman. It's not going to be the same. But if that short passing game with the running backs can come together like it did against the Chargers, maybe that's a sign that eventually they can figure out in the red zone.
Yeah, I think the running backs are really the engine of the offense right now. And the best plays against the Chargers seem to be those swing passes out of the backfield to James White and Rex Burkhead. When they got those guys the ball, good things generally happened. And the wide receivers have become more complementary pieces.
Let's switch over to the defense here. And you know, I thought it was interesting you said that now the offense is more of a concern than the defense. They played well. They only allowed 13 points. But when I looked at this, you know, you don't have Dont'a Hightower moving forward for the year. You question a little bit how that affects the defense. He's one of their biggest playmakers. He's a guy that can play off the edge and rush the passer, also help with communication. They only allowed 13 points, like I said, but man, it felt like they kind of got away with a few. There was the missed field goal, which I think Cassius Marsh got a piece of. Two touchdowns the Chargers had called back, and I honestly thought both of those were sort of unforced errors by the Chargers or bad calls. The first one, Tyrell Williams, I thought he just ran out of bounds. I know those guys were saying that Bademosi forced him out of bounds. I didn't see that. I think he just lost track of where he was, and he only put one foot out of bounds. That negated a touchdown. And then the Travis Benjamin touchdown that was negated by a pick play that didn't really look like a pick play to me. So when you look at the defense, it was once again, they didn't allow 400 yards of offense, which they had done in the first six games. They didn't allow a 300-yard passer, which they had done in the first six games. So 2 weeks in a row with that, which is good. But I'm still not feeling totally confident in them, Ben.
Well, yeah, they're not exactly the monsters of the Midway, but I think they're doing a lot better with their communication, obviously. They didn't have too many breakdowns yesterday. And I think the Patriots even held them around 300 yards, and 87 of them came on that one Melvin Gordon run, which, you know, it's inexcusable. You can't give those plays up, but it's also kind of a fluky play. Those things generally don't happen too often. I think the fact that they're playing without Hightower, they still didn't have Gilmore in the lineup. Malcolm Brown was out. Pretty decent performance overall, I'd say. The Chargers were only on the field for 21 minutes. They couldn't really establish long drives. And, you know, I thought guys like Kyle Van Noy and David Harris stepped up well for Dont'a Hightower. And the defense is just a little more sound technically right now. They're not giving up those big plays, and that's what the Bill Belichick defense is predicated on.
It's a great point. It's part of their strategy, make the other team execute. Hope there are some unforced errors. There are a lot of those from the Chargers. And the difference between now, I think, and the first four games of the season for the Patriots overall, and especially on defense, Ben, is that you're not seeing them busting coverages, giving up big plays, like you mentioned, and blowing leads. Those were all issues for them in those first four games. We're not seeing that as much anymore. You mentioned Stephon Gilmore didn't play once again, so that's the third straight game that he missed. I think a lot of people thought he'd be back. He has the ankle and the concussion. Do you think this was just a situation where they were like, look, we can give him an extra week? Or do you think they looked at it and said, well, it's going pretty well with Bademosi. Like, let's just keep riding Bademosi here.
Yeah, you know, honestly, I can't tell you exactly what's going on with Gilmore right now. I'd like to think that it was what you said to start, that, well, we got the bye coming up and you've got an ankle injury and let's keep you healthy to make sure we've got you for the stretch run. But there was a report yesterday that Gilmore actually left the stadium when he was made inactive. And again, is that because he was upset or the team didn't want him around? Or maybe, you know, you've got some headaches still from that concussion. Why don't you go home and not deal with it? But I'm interested to see what exactly is going on with Gilmore. They obviously could use him. I thought the Chargers went out of their way to target Bademosi yesterday. Phillip Rivers barely threw it at Malcolm Butler, and most of his passes went towards Bademosi. And, you know, he gave up some catches, also made some plays in the passing game as well. He's a guy that I think they've gotten away with him playing corner for these three games here, but that's not someone you want to go with long-term moving forward. You paid Gilmore all that money. He's got the elite cornerback skills. You want him in your lineup, but I do wonder if there is something a little bit going on behind the scenes with him, because obviously it just has not worked out with him so far through the first eight games.
Yeah, and I think he's a guy that they need, right, if they're going to play their best. And I think one of the things, you've covered the team for a long time, you know, sometimes Bill Belichick, the Patriots coach, would like to have a guy, he'd rather have a guy of lesser talent who will do what they say and execute the defense the way they want than a guy who's more talented but maybe can't do all the things that they want to do from a disguise standpoint or a coverage standpoint. And you see that with Bademosi. He's really smart, and he'll just do the things they want him to do, even if he can't do it as, you know, at as high level as maybe a better cornerback. Where with Gilmore, I think he was trying to do what they wanted to do, but he wasn't necessarily comfortable with all those things. And I don't know when he comes back after missing 3 weeks how comfortable he'll be.
They definitely need Gilmore moving forward, and I think it's been a rough transition for him coming from Buffalo, where, you know, he maybe wasn't in such a winning program, and it's a lot different here with the Patriots and everything they do here. So it's been a rough transition, but now he's got 2 weeks to get his head clear. He's had 3 weeks off before that, so I'm expecting him to be back in the lineup. And, you know, he was playing better, so I think that will continue when he gets back in the lineup.
A trade deadline is Tuesday. Where do you see the Patriots' biggest areas of need being? And I'm going to throw one out there for you, Ben. I'm telling you, you know, if there's a tight end out there that they can bring in to team up with Gronk, because Dwayne Allen still doesn't have a catch. I know everyone's focused on defense. I wouldn't mind take a shot at Eric Ebron, the tight end from the Detroit Lions.
Eric Ebron, you know, I don't know if he's a great fit for the Patriots because he's not much of a blocker. They love those complete tight ends, but there's no doubt they need more help in the passing game. Two names that are currently not playing that I'm kind of intrigued to see if anything happens with them. One is Calvin Johnson, and the other is Anquan Boldin. Both of them are retired. Both of them reportedly have received permission to kind of shop around and see if they can line up a trade where I think the Lions and the Bills would both be willing to trade their rights. Again, would the Bills be willing to trade Anquan Boldin to a division rival in the Patriots? I'm not so sure, but I know that the Patriots did talk with Boldin in the offseason before deciding not to sign him. And then Calvin Johnson's always been a very tantalizing name. The Patriots obviously have a good connection with the Lions front office. We always have those Larry Fitzgerald annual trade rumors. I'm not expecting that one, but you know, I wouldn't be shocked to see them pick up another receiver, some more help on that side of the ball. Philip Dorsett, obviously, has not really worked out. And then I think they always need help in the trenches and at linebacker. I think those two spots, especially with Hightower now out, they could always use another big body along the defensive line to help in the run game.
Yeah, maybe a little bit of pass rush would certainly help them here. All right, that is the great Ben Volen of the Boston Globe. You can find him on Twitter at Ben Volen. Look for his excellent weekly film breakdown in the Boston Globe as well. Ben, thanks for joining us on Season Ticket.
Thank you, Chris.
Coming up, the Boston Celtics are trying to show they belong atop the Atlantic Division, even without Gordon Hayward. Can they continue their winning streak? We'll talk hoops next. Welcome back. A quick note. If you like Season Ticket, be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribing is the best way to make sure you get the latest episode as soon as it's available. All right, now we're going to switch things over to the Celtics. They've won four in a row after a tough 0-2 start, and they play the San Antonio Spurs tonight at TD Garden. To help us break down the state of the Celtics, we now bring in via Skype Boston Globe Celtics beat reporter Adam Himmelsbach. Adam, how are you?
Chris, good. I watched all that baseball game last night, so I'm a little foggy.
Hey, man, I feel you on that. What a great game that was. What a great game that was. But we'll keep it to hoops here. It seems like the Celtics have settled in now after the initial shock and dismay over the Gordon Hayward injury in the opener in Cleveland. They've won four in a row. They're atop the Atlantic Division. What has changed since those first two games?
Yeah, I mean, it's always kind of funny that especially the first week of the season or even 2 weeks, like the overreactions in both ways. You know, they lose those first two games. Gordon gets hurt. They're down against the Sixers in the second half, and it's like total sky is falling. People are talking about, is this a lottery team? Maybe they should just tank. I'm like, you know, obviously those are extremely extreme views. But now, of course, this like absolute outlook has shifted. They've won four in a row. Like you said, they look like one of the more powerful teams in the East, kind of like we expected them to be. Marcus Morris hasn't played a game for them yet. A lot of people almost forget about him at this point. I think what's happened is their defense has really been good, and they're rebounding the ball, which people didn't really expect. They won these four games. Kyrie had a nice surge in their last win, but he hasn't been like dominant Kyrie yet for the most part. It's not like he's carrying them. they're having guys like Aaron Baines, they're having guys like Daniel Tice step into these important roles and play really, really well, and it's given them a lift. And then, of course, you have to mention Jason Tatum, who's just been so incredibly consistent as a rookie.
The rookie Jason Tatum, he's been outstanding, a 20-point effort on Saturday night against the Miami Heat. You mentioned Marcus Morris there, the forward they acquired from the Detroit Pistons in the trade for Avery Bradley. Marcus Morris, I know, was targeting tonight's game against the Spurs, but in listening to Celtics coach Brad Stevens, it doesn't sound like he's going to make his Celtics debut tonight.
Yeah, Brad said he wants to put him through one hard practice before throwing him out there. They were off on Sunday, so there was no opportunity for that. Of course, they're doing okay without him right now. They want to have him back. They want to have him in there, but they want to be safe with it and cautious with it and not throw him out and have him out long term. But I mean, I think their thought is practice Tuesday, put him through that hard practice, then maybe return him against Sacramento on Wednesday night.
Yeah, that makes some sense. I think Celtics fans eager to see Marcus Morris, what he can bring. It's another guy who's in the rotation. You also mentioned Kyrie Irving. Obviously, Kyrie Irving is kind of like the story of the season now. A lot of, for better or worse, what happens to the Celtics and whether it's fair or unfair. Kyrie Irving's kind of like a quarterback in the NFL now, Adam. Whatever happens with the team, they're going to ascribe it to him. If the team wins, they're going to give him all the credit, even if he doesn't deserve it. If the team underachieves, they're going to give him all the blame, even if he doesn't deserve it. The other night in Miami, I thought he took a step forward. He was great down the stretch of that game. He scored 9 of his 24 points in the final 2 minutes and 3 seconds.
Yeah, I mean, this is what he asked for, right, Chris? Like, he wants to be the guy. He wanted to go to a team where he was the guy, where he was the one who was counted on down the stretch, and they didn't turn to LeBron James, and he's the one people look to, and he's the one opposing fans boo, you know? And he's getting this opportunity now to be the guy. And those stretches, like, look, Isaiah Thomas was an extremely dynamic scorer who could do things not a lot of guys could do. He's still a different player than Kyrie. Kyrie's a guy, when a play breaks down, there's really maybe no one like him who's able to do things with the ball that he is. And we're seeing hints of that now. That's the crazy thing. Like I said earlier, they won these four games. Besides late in that Miami game, you know, small stretches here and there, he hasn't had a game where he dominates, where you look back and be like, man, Kyrie was absolutely incredible tonight. And those games are coming. Like, he's Kyrie Irving. He's going to have those games. So I think for them to be where they are now without him, you know, with him still kind of finding his footing a little bit, showing these flashes, he'll have one of these complete games. And I think that's when buzz will really start to escalate around him.
Yeah, I think Celtics fans were looking for one of those games he would have against the Celtics where he would just take over and basically be unconscious and, you know, hitting everything in sight. And it's interesting because Brad Stevens said that he feels like Kyrie's still like passing up shots that he should take because he's trying to make sure that, you know, he has that reputation for being sort of a ball dominant player, a one-on-one player. And it seems like he's trying to change that. And at times he might be overpassing.
Yeah, I think that could be true at times. And I think he also deserves some credit, though, that he's not forcing it. You know, you're seeing teams throw two guys at him a lot, like we saw them do to Isaiah when Isaiah was just crushing people last year. And Kyrie's adjusting. He's making the right play. He's happy to make the right play. And it's having good effects right now.
You knew it was going to take a little bit of time, and it's still so early in the season. You're absolutely right. People overreact and sort of panic a little bit. I want to talk to you about something that people probably don't really understand. And I'll be honest, I'm not sure I fully understand it, Adam. Because Gordon Hayward is expected to be out for the season with that dislocated ankle, Celtics President of Basketball Operations Danny Ainge has used a provision in the collective bargaining agreement of the NBA, and it's a disabled player exception. It's for $8.4 million, and this is something the Celtics could potentially use. Can you explain what that disabled player exception is, and how likely are they to use it?
I mean, it sounds like it's more important than it is, I think, to a lot of people, Chris. Like, it's better to have than to not. Essentially, the Celtics are over the cap. This gives them $8.4 million in room to sign a guy, to make a trade where they bring in that kind of salary. But if there was a free agent on the market right now who deserved $8 million, he probably wouldn't be a free agent. Like, the season has started. There aren't a lot of guys out there. It might come into play a little more, like, closer to the trade deadline where a team's looking to kind of get rid of salary or something like that, getting rid of an expiring guy. And that's the other part of people understand. It has to, if you acquire a guy via trade, he's got to be on an expiring contract. So the Celtics' options are a little bit limited with this. But Danny Ainge is also been pretty clear about, look, we have these young guys, even before the Hayward injury, they have an open roster spot. He's like, we have these young guys. We want to see what they can do. He's like, we don't really want to bring in just another veteran and have them take minutes from some of these young players. He's like, at some point, you have to see what you have, and that's what we're doing. And that's what they've done these first couple of weeks, and I think they're comfortable with that. but it's a good thing to have in your back pocket.
Yeah, and you're talking about Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown are the young guys that they probably don't want to stunt their growth. You mentioned
guys like, you know, Semi Ojeleye is getting important minutes. You know, you saw Jabari Bird get an important flash. Like, other guys that they want to see, are these players going to be a part of our future? Let's find out.
All right, Adam, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it. That's Adam Himmelsbach. You can find him on Twitter, at Adam Himmelsbach. Thanks for coming on Season Ticket, Adam.
Hey, no problem, Chris. Talk to you later.
Finally, the cheap seats. One of the great elements of sports is that it's a meritocracy. The best performers and performances win. That's why Emily Nash of Lunenburg High School should be crowned the Central Massachusetts Division III Boys Golf Champion. Nash is a girl, but she plays on the Lunenburg boys team in the fall because the school doesn't field a girls team, which would play in the spring. Last week, Nash shot the lowest score at the Central Mass Division III Boys Sectional Championship. She shot a 75. That was 4 strokes better than any male competitor. But she was denied the victory and the trophy by an arbitrary rule that puts a glass ceiling on female golfers. The Massachusetts Interscholastic Athletic Association, or MIAA, rules that girls playing golf on boys' teams can only have their scores counted towards the team portion of a golf state tournament. They are not eligible for individual honors. Nash was denied the win and a spot in the state championship tournament today in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. Is this a lesson we should be teaching our high school athletes, that they're defined more by their gender than their ability? True equality is giving everyone the same chance to succeed. The MIAA is denying that to Nash and any other competitor like her. Nash played from the same tees as the boys, and she outplayed them. The trophy belongs to the best golfer. No gender qualifier required. That's it for this edition of Season Ticket. If you liked us, be sure to tell a friend and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Chris Gasper. We'll see you tomorrow.